At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello out there. From time to time in a romantic relationship, things can get a little stale. The spark gets extinguished by familiarity, then complacency, then stagnation. And with stagnation comes the distractions, work, kids, individual pursuits. And in this stagnant state, the relationship is up for grabs, unbeknownst to the couple. Any relationship that has become apathetic to itself, routined, empty, is in danger of being destroyed by an outsider willing to fill the void. And it's not their fault. It's not your partner's fault. It's not your fault. It's just the way love works. Love between lovers needs tending to. And in understanding this, it's not love's fault either. When an affair sprouts up like a beautiful weed, love is hungry. Love is deserving. And love, as they say, we'll find a way. And that's nice, but also, love is selfish, love is blind, love is a thief. And when all else fails, it is far from beneath love to kill. Those of us who think we know love will argue that I'm speaking of passion, and that passion is not love, that I'm speaking of infatuation, of empty trysts, and that love is more than the ugliness I'm associating it with. But they're wrong. Just about everything significant in life is fueled by love. Happiness is love. Sadness, love. Grief, jealousy, anger, hate is non-existent without love. From Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, quote, "Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself," end quote. The opposite of love isn't hate. It's indifference. And when love is being stymied by something or someone, it's incredible how indifferent we can become towards obstacles keeping us from love. Especially when we're an entitled brat. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. The entitled love, a Mirinda boob. Now that I've shared my uplifting feelings about love, about how love is a psychopath that is just as fulfilled compelling a mentally ill mother to drown her infant children one by one in a bathtub as it is making a person's heart sing on Christmas morning while sipping a cup of hot cocoa, let's talk about entitlement in love. Some people grew up being handed everything, and when they entered the real world, they expected the handouts to continue. And when the handouts didn't come, they maybe found themselves a partner that was suitably subservient and willing to appease their entitlement. The problem is that you can't possibly respect a partner who doesn't respect themselves, and though it's nice for a while to be adored, that kind of love gets old, quick. It has little substance. Life with a shell of a person feels empty, believe it or not. And though there's a part of love and subservience, it's weak, pathetic, gross even. Isn't it ironic that when handed everything, we as human beings end up empty-handed, hollow, and will do anything to fill that void. Drugs, alcohol, promiscuous sex, shopping sprees, we'll stuff food in our mouths, anything. The entitled brat is ravenous for a sense of satisfaction, starving for it. And when they think they've found it, usually in the form of their one true love, a fallacy pursued by most self-centered silver spoons, they'll do anything to keep it. Mirinda Boob is one hell of a name. It bothers me, mainly because I'm familiar with a woman attached to it now, but also, Mirinda? You mean Miranda, right? And Boob. How unfortunate. Anyways, Mirinda Boob was a spoiled brat from birth. Well, from 4 months after her birth when she was adopted by the Heinzelmans, a well-off Christian couple from Center Hall, Pennsylvania, whom immediately took to spoiling Mirinda, first by giving her a name that literally means to admire, then by showering the girl with everything she could ever want all throughout her life. The pedigreed Heitzelmans basically got a baby and customized it to be their little princess. And that's okay, I'm just being a dick about it because people who are born with silver spoons in their mouths bother me and a perpetrator. And parents who can see no wrong in their children because they've designed them to be an extension of themselves, like a toy they created to be adored by others, they're fucking idiots. And that's what we have here. Anyways, before Mirinda was a boob, she was a Heinzelman. Though, just so you know, the Heinzelmans were boobs long before their daughter became one too. As you can imagine, Mirinda's adoptive parents had high standards for who their little girl should date when the time came. There was a disturbing period of time for the Heinzelmans when Mirinda seemed hell-bent on being exclusively with boys that they disapproved of. It was almost like even though they'd given her every advantage in life, tended to her every need, and cocooned her in a blanket of security and support, their little princess somehow couldn't respect them, and she seemed to take pleasure in disobeying them. Perplexing, I know. But thankfully, the right boy came along, and when he did, the Heinzelmans did everything in their power to help Mirinda lock him in. In 2002, a couple of years after Mirinda graduated, she met Sam Boob. Here's Mirinda's adoptive mother talking about this occasion like it happened to her.
She had gone to a Powder Puff game at their high school, and Sammy was there. Mirinda had gotten a Mustang for graduation, and Sammy was really into cars. He asked if he could drive it, and she said sure, and that was the way they met. It was very soon after that game that she started bringing him to our house. We liked Sammy. He was from a Christian home, which was very important to us.
Sam Boob was 22 years old when he met Mirinda and her brand new 2002 cherry red Mustang. Mirinda was forever tanned, short, thin, with heavily gelled brunette hair that hung in stiff frozen waves around her pouting face. Nothing seemed to be ever going right for Mirinda, though if you have a Mirinda in your life, you know that all of her troubles were fabricated for attention. Sam Boob, despite his incredibly unattractive name, a name that I truly feel should be changed. I mean, come on, Sam Boob. Also the last name Dick or Butt? Cock? I had a teacher named Mrs. Cock. I swear, no offense, but people go to the dentist when their teeth are fucked up. They go get moles removed or they get butt implants. But these changes only help you. They'll come back in the genetics. A name change costs like $100. I looked it up, $120 here in Canada, and you'll be doing your future lineage such a service. No offense. Hang on to it. It's cool. Be confident. It's not like God handed these names out, though. Like, some dummy didn't think it out a few centuries ago and went with Boob. That's what happened. Why should you and your children and your children's children have to suffer for that numbskull's error in naming themselves something like Boob? Like, let your future lineage, you know, celebrate your decision in changing your name. We can always refer to the former boobs and butts and dicks and cocks, but we don't have to be them. Come on, it's like $120. Anyway, Sam Boob was a hit with the ladies. They didn't want to marry him or anything because then their last name would be Boob, but Sam Boob did do well with women, and Marinda recognized this and was motivated to make him hers. And she did. Accepting a previous child from another relationship of Sam's, Marinda made Sam marry her, then immediately began taking to the task of getting knocked up to even the score, then surpass it with two more quick kids. Marinda, the winner. Sam Boob had a decent job as head of maintenance for the Solid Waste Authority, and he was always doing something on the side for cash, fixing up old cars and farm equipment. Marinda, meanwhile, worked a little bit at her mother's nursery school in the basement of a church, where she'd bring her kids to be cared for free, and do nothing but gossip. She'd show up late with the kids, you know, here, this is what we do here, take care of them for me. And then she barely worked. She wouldn't help with any of the other kids. She just, you know, she'd show up late and then leave early without her kids, of course. Mom would drop them off, you know, she'd deal with that. And then she'd go and spend Sam's hard-earned money shopping. Speaking of Sam's money, the guy was doing his best, working when he wasn't sleeping. But Marinda's spending, along with the responsibility of the mortgage and the bills, was stretching Sam thin. He was being pressed, like in a mammogram machine. And that's my final boob joke, my boob poke, my boob graze. It's not. I'm lying. There are many frustrating aspects of this case, but one that stood out was that Sam Boob had been railroaded into a soul-crushing monthly mortgage payment by Marinda's parents. As a wedding gift, they put up the cash for a down payment on a sprawling home just outside of town. Sprawling in more ways than one, as the young couple would immediately become stretched thin financially once locked in by this gift from the Heintzelmans. As Marinda's father would tell you, the place had a lot of property. It was a beautiful spot. I mean, it had a shop for Sam to work in after a long day of working. Marinda's parents were a little taken aback when, not long after the kids had moved in and started making babies, Marinda came to them crying, saying that Sam couldn't keep up with the payments. Marinda's father, the town funeral director, the town funeral homeowner, and he had cash for generations, so he began paying the mortgage anytime things got tight. Kind of like a setup, you know? It's like, oh, shit, you're not as big of a man as me. No problem, Sam. You're working your ass up. I'm just in here painting faces. And this happened once a month, seeing as how Marinda had a spending problem, and Sam could only make enough to cover the mortgage if nobody bought or ate anything in this home that they shared with four kids. Anyways, Marinda would rack up debt, then blame her husband for not being able to keep up with her compulsive spending. The money she made at the daycare would disappear as soon as it came in. Thanks to her privilege, Marinda made twice as much while doing half the work as the other childcare workers. And on top of this, she used the daycare, like I said, as free babysitting, while she left early most days to shop around. Seven years into her marriage, and four kids deep, Marinda was bored, angsty, unfulfilled, and open to anything that would make her life feel bright again, like it had when she was single and driving her brand new Mustang, along with her overbearing parents and unsuitable male suitors wild. It was the summer of 2009 when Marinda, Boob, now 27, and feeling like each passing year was a shovel of dirt on her waking death, met a carny named Ron Heichel at a convenience store and gave him her number when he asked for it. Ugh, not much worse than having a carny sink their hooks into your girl, licking their baked bean teeth while sexting all kinds of heinous suggestions to your wife while you're at work? Good God. If I ever discovered I'd been cucked by a carny, I'd do a swan dive from a Ferris wheel and bounce off of the Gravitron, hopefully get slingshotted into a teacup where my broken body would spin and wobble insanely as the screams of children sang my soul away to God knows where. Who cares at that point? Didn't you hear the news? My wife's banging a carny. And I'm just messing around. I mean, Ron Heichel was actually a good-looking guy. Charming and chivalrous. Another dirty, rotten carny trick. Let me guess, he had a suntan and looked great with his shirt off, too. And that sounds like I've had a girl cheat on me with a carny. And if you feel that that's what's going on here, you'd be incorrect. It was a butcher. Things move quickly between Ron and Miranda, and it doesn't take long for the relationship to progress from texts to coffee dates to secret rendezvous and parked cars with steamy windows. Ron Heichel is in love. He is completely smitten by Miranda, his little squirrel. She's cutesy, using baby voices, petite with dark features she was, and it's not just her squirrely behavior and looks that are driving him nuts. It's not just that she's married, though. That's no dead a turn-on for a macho personality like Heichel's. You know, these fucking carnies and butchers. More than anything else, it's that Miranda is a damsel in distress. And Ron Heichel fancies himself a knight in shining armor. Ron had grown up rough, seeing his mother be abused all through his younger years, and as a result, had little tolerance for abusers. He tells Miranda that what's happening to her is unacceptable and offers a shoulder to cry on, a lap to sit in. You know the drill. He even offers to beat the living shit out of Sam Boob and take her away from the hell she claims to be living in. It makes it easier for both of them to believe that Sam Boob is abusive. Miranda has been spreading the likely lie for years along with her legs, dropping hints here and there to co-workers in a bid to gain sympathy. Only Miranda knows whether or not her claims to Ron Heichel and suggestion to friends and family of her husband's violent behavior behind closed doors were true. Miranda never had bruises, and some who knew Sam and Miranda thought it more likely Miranda was slapping Sam around, but we'll give her the benefit of the doubt for a moment here while I unravel the rest of this. August 23rd, 2009, a Sunday, weeks into Miranda's affair with carny Ron Heichel. The boobs are lifting themselves up for church. Miranda's preoccupied with her cell phone while Sam makes breakfast. Outside, something catches Sam's attention, and he exits the home to investigate. Miranda looks up from her phone, and when the children startle at the muffled sound of a shotgun blast, she calmly tells them that it's time to get dressed in their Sunday best. Out in the shop, Sam Boob must be thinking that he's come across a thief, and that if he can make it back out, perhaps the shadow that just shot him will scatter. He stumbles out into the sunlight, clutching the bloom of blood spreading on his side. Sam's life is pouring out through his fingers, fingers that have had their tips blown off in defense against this ambush with his own damn gun. Ain't that a bitch? It is, Sam Boob. It's a bitch. Life. And then you marry one. The shadow swells when it meets the light, and its confidence saps any that Samuel had left, any hope. It grows, the shadow does, until it shrouds its helpless victim. Ron Heichel presses the muzzle of Sam's shotgun to what he believes to be an abuser's back, and then blows Sam Boob away. Heichel looks up towards the house, shielding his eyes with a shaking hand, a hand that steadies when Miranda appears at the window, flanked by the little ones. He smiles, thinking she is beginning to do the same. I did good, right, Miranda? I did it. I did it for you, babe. I did it for us. Her mouth curls into a crescent, then opens into a full moon, and Heichel hears a torturous wailing begin to seep through the glass. Oh no, Ron Heichel thinks. Why is she? Who is she? Then, too late, he is a scattering shadow, fleeing wildly across the lawn and into the woods, spurned on by the cacophony of shrieks and no's and whys coming from Miranda, his one true love. What the fuck was that all about? Heichel bursts out of the bushes and back onto the dirt trail where he came from and hops onto the back of the scooter that his buddy Kermit Butts sits waiting on. 26-year-old Butts had been honey-dicked into this assassination of Boob by the asshole Heichel, who was soon calling him a pussy when Butts freaks out back at the carnival upon hearing the whole story. Boobs, butts, assholes, pussies, honey-dick, and Kermit Butts would do anything Heichel asked. They were bunkmates while traveling with the carnival. They were tight. But also, Butts looked up to Heichel as the tougher, better-looking, more intelligent of the two. Perhaps Butts had a thing for assholes. Who knows? And it's a joke. I mean, the whole thing is so ridiculous, and the craziest part is that it easily could have been worked out. The plan wasn't half bad. They'd been gone only about 20 minutes from the carnival. You know, nobody back there would have taken notice of their brief absence from Butts and Heichel. Carnies disappear and reappear constantly at the carnival. Sometimes with a girl. More often, they'll disappear with another carny, usually to grab a smoke or a drink or a pussy or a dick. In Ron Heichel's mind is Miranda's moon face, the torture scream still ringing in his ears. A call he cannot answer. What the fuck was that all about? Heichel can't stop feeling uneasy about the way she'd switched off, or maybe on, like that, back there. She had led the way, had agreed to the password. Did she want her pawn to put in today? Miranda had led him through the woods, signaling through text when the coast was clear to slip into the shop, next instructing him to the location of the shotgun, orchestrating the whole thing so coldly, so impressively.
Now make a noise.
Heichel had clattered some tools.
Okay. He's coming, babe.
Ron Heichel had done his part, but the way Miranda had screamed when she saw the outcome, it was almost too convincing. There's no one fucking around. It's just me, you, the kids, and a dead body. What the fuck? Oh, well. Nothing he could do about it now. The lyrics of Say Sarah, Sarah, whatever will be will greet the carnies as they return along a dirt path through the woods on that scooter to come back to work. Kermit Butts had proven a solid getaway driver. Heichel had proven his love for Miranda Boob. Heichel had done his part. Now to see if she could do hers. Kermit Butts covertly parks the scooter, and him and Heichel head back to their tasks at the Grange Fair here in this small Pennsylvania town that they've been for a couple of weeks, each sneaking sips of liquor to calm their nerves as the sirens in the distance are swallowed by the sounds of the carnival. Sirens that were unnoticed by everyone, save the shifty carnies turned killers, a transformation that they completed within a few slow cycles of the Ferris wheel.
Just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be?
Could this be your summer of discovery? Yeah, with Rosetta Stone it could be. Whether you're traveling abroad, planning a staycation, or just shaking up your routine, what better time to dive into a new language? With Rosetta Stone, you can turn downtime into meaningful progress. Rosetta Stone is a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your summer schedule. I've been using it to try to learn Japanese, as I mentioned already multiple times. I mean, Rosetta Stone and I are good friends at this point, and I'm surprised how quickly you can pick things up in bite-sized lessons. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're planning on going somewhere or interacting with someone who has another language underneath their belt or a country that has required to speak that language wherever you are in certain situations, you can pick up bite-sized things to get you by. And I really like that about it. And it makes you feel like you are learning when you haven't developed the entire scope of it. At least you have a foot in the door with these bite-sized lessons and learning with their true accent feature. Rosetta Stone is the trusted language expert. It has 30 years of experience teaching people. I mean, there's millions of users and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. Rosetta Stone is a go-to tool for real language growth. And you can learn faster, retain longer. The big thing with Rosetta Stone for me is that you get this lifetime membership with them when you sign on, and you just never know when it's going to come in handy. Whatever trip comes up in the future, you can prepare yourself with this in your back pocket. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential right now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. This episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor here at Dark Topic. And we're so excited to announce they've teamed up with Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, on two special edition products, a salted caramel chip protein bar and a yuzu mango hydration mix drink. And I've been eating a whole hell of a lot of salted caramel chip protein bars. I don't get sick of them. That's one thing I'll say about those. It's a great treat and decent for you, as well as the yuzu mango hydration mix drink. I mean, I'll have one before bed. I'll have one when I wake up in the morning. Something about it. I mean, really great flavor. And makes me feel like I came back to life after I chug one of those bad boys. IQ Bar's plant protein bars, they're mixed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit. The salted caramel chip IQ Bar that I've just mentioned there, it has 12 grams of protein and only 1 gram of sugar, and it has brain-boosting nutrients in it like lion's mane, adaptogen. The Yuzu Mango IQ mix is a refreshing zero-sugar hydration mix that marries bold flavor and essential electrolytes for your body and lion's mane plus magnesium for your brain. Just mix with water for Michelin star taste and next level hydration. 10% of sales, I should mention, go to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, which supports the next generation of aspiring U.S. chefs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain, clearly I didn't drink my yuzu drink this morning, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. This is the snack that you should start stocking in your cupboards when you go to reach for that, you know, ice cream at night, that chocolate bar during the day. I'd suggest reach for an IQ bar. They sent me the salted caramel chip IQ bar, the yuzu mango mix. And I mean, again, I've been going back and forth on those, and I just can't believe that something so delicious could be so good for me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% of all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text DARK to 64,000. Text DARK to the number 64,000. That's DARK to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. Will I be pretty? Normal one,
what's the address?
Jesseville Road, Center Hall.
Okay, what's your name, ma'am?
Miranda Boone. I love you, baby.
When police and ambulance and fire trucks splash all over the Boob farm, they find Miranda there, pounding her fists in the grass. She is inconsolable. Sam Boob is laying face up in front of his shop, clearly dead as a result of 2 shotgun blasts. His fingertips are missing on one hand. The shirt he's wearing will later reveal burns around the entry wound to his back, indicating Boob had been finished off at point-blank range with his own shotgun. Initially, as planned by Miranda, I'm not even trying to hide it here, cleavage is out. This looks like a robbery gone wrong. Somebody had snuck into the Boob's outbuilding while they prepared for church. Sam had heard them rummaging around, and when he'd come up to see what was going on, the intruder had used the shotgun he, or she, had discovered before taking Sam Boob out. She, Miranda, is a mess. But the responders notice that she's not quite as messy as she should be. She claims to have attempted CPR, but if this were the case, the young woman would be covered in blood. But she's clean, other than the mascara smeared around her eyes. Those eyes, they sure do dry up quick when she thinks nobody's looking. This trick of Miranda's will later be noticed by friends and family at the funeral. She seems to be able to turn the waterworks off and on as needed, which is disturbing. Though her mother will later claim this to be a tick of her daughter's grief. Her mother, the great apologist, the enabler of Miranda Boob. Also of note to responders, Miranda stays away from the body of Sam, never asking if her husband is gone, if he can be saved. She only makes phone calls and paces the yard nervously. Her parents soon arrive, and the tears are there to greet them. Miranda is on her knees, pounding her fists into the grass again. An attending officer observes this strange cycle play out. While only a few miles away, Ron Heichel stares numbly into space, smoking a cigarette, sitting on the stoop of the Frog Game in a pond much like the one that he would never build for his one true love, as the Ferris wheel creaks to a halt. Miranda Boob and Ron Heichel had only known one another for a summer. In that time, they had fallen in love and decided that because Sam Boob was abusive, allegedly, that he needed to die. Because of Ron Heichel's difficult past, being witness to the abuse of his mother, he was easily convinced by Miranda that murder was the answer here. Ron Heichel had narrowly survived a nasty motorcycle accident years previous to meeting Miranda, and as a result, he felt like he had a free pass, like he had a purpose, like he'd be protected if acting righteously by God. The murder of an abuser in the name of love surely fell under the category of righteous. The problem was that Miranda didn't actually love Ron Heichel. She wanted only the insurance money from Sam's death. She felt entitled to be taken care of financially by her husband, one way or another. Also, Miranda wanted badly to be with her true entitled love. Sam Boob's sister, Christy, immediately had her suspicions about Miranda's involvement. There had been rumors around town that a man had been visiting the Boob home while Sam was at work. And though nobody wanted to believe it possible Miranda could be involved, Sam's sister had an ally in her husband, Ben. And Ben went to work for his deceased brother-in-law in the form of contacting investigators and offering to wear a wire while speaking to Miranda. Ben Court was his last name. Ben Court knew that Miranda couldn't resist the attentions of a man. He knew that if she had something to hide, he can get it from her simply by being nice to Miranda. And he was right. Miranda Boob was full of entitlement, but empty on street smarts. Here is a clip from the conversation Ben Court had with Miranda Boob, the very first and only time he wore a wire. It was all that investigators needed.
Can I just talk really frank? Marriage can be hard, and you and I married into the same family, and we got our ups and downs too. They have a lot bigger, and they want to, like, they're looking at you.
Well, I know they're looking at me.
I think that you know who did this. And I think that we can figure it out. Miranda, somebody's going to prison for their whole life.
I do know who did it.
After this conversation, Miranda Boob agreed to be driven by her brother-in-law to the Grange Fair and attempt to point out Ron Heichel, the man she was now building a story against, telling Ben that Heichel had been relentless in stalking her and likely had something to do with her husband's murder. I mean, definitely. She just thought that he was going to beat him up, Ben. You know, they were texting, I got a hand, I wanted coffee.
And he wants to stop texting me. And then he said he's going to beat him up, and then he killed him.
Miranda was becoming more excited than scared as Ben continued to assure her she was doing the right thing. But yes, Miranda, this is not your fault. And yes, Miranda, of course I understand. It's what anyone else would do. She met who she thought was a friend in Ron Heichel. She confided in him about the abuse. And Ron must have taken matters into his own hands. Like you said, it happens all the time. So now point him out to me. Oh, there he is. Miranda seems relieved. Oh, there he is. There he is, Ben, right there, in the cowboy hat, smoking meth in that alleyway. Miranda asks Ben, should she delete, the messages that him and her were sending back and forth to each other? Would that make me look bad? Do you think I was just trying to be nice? He was just so pushy. Do you think just in case, Ben? Ben Court takes a good look at his brother-in-law's likely killer and mutters his reply. Quote, they can get your texts either way, stupid. The friendliness is gone from Ben's voice, and Miranda's stupid smile fades. She's suddenly not so excited or relieved.
Ben, can you just take me home?
He does. Then Ben Court returns to the police station that afternoon with everything the investigators need to bring in a prime suspect for questioning. They'd already been shaking down carnies like Kermit Butts, thinking it possible one of those greasy flea bags had spotted the boob farm and marked it as a promising target for robbery. It's not uncommon for a carnival to roll into town like a Trojan horse for pillaging vagrants, meth smoke billowing from its nostrils. And if you're a carny and that hurts your feelings, then you're not a real carny anyways. And if you're a bitch like Miranda Boob, then when that hurts your feelings, then you're probably a bitch. Why would someone call you a bitch if you weren't a bitch? I mean, I don't know. He called me a bitch. Oh, yeah?
Well, that's not an appropriate word.
Okay. Also not appropriate to act like a bitch and think you can get away with it. It's 2022. We're over it. Kermit Butts, Ron Heichel's, his wheelman driving that little scooter and pulling him up to commit the murder. Butts had already become a person of interest through the process of questioning all carnival workers. He's sweaty and stumbling over his words, just like every other worker at the carnival that they speak to. Okay, that's enough. But other than appearing nervous, Kermit Butts had seemed to know exactly what the investigators were getting at. The rest that they had interviewed had been completely clueless to the boob murder. And following the slick piece of freelance undercover work performed by Sam Boob's brother-in-law, Ben Court, Ron Heichel is brought in for questioning. Then Miranda is brought in to positively ID the man she now openly admits to have been confiding in, the man she believes may have gotten the wrong idea here, in Ron. Kermit Butts is brought back in, and when he finds out that Ron Heichel is being seriously looked at, he tells him everything. Butts shits all over Heichel, tells the investigators that he'd been banging Boob for a couple of weeks and that he was crazy about her, Heichel was. Butts tells investigators about driving Heichel to the Boob farm and about hearing the gunshots, then the screams, then driving Heichel back to the carnival on his scooter. Yeah, that's right. Butts had been scooting all around town for Ron Heichel. And he tells investigators that Ron had been extremely agitated in the days leading up to this and that he had been in near constant communication with Miranda through text all the way up until he got off the scooter and crept onto the Boob property through the woods. When investigators press Butts as to why Heichel was so agitated, Butts shares that Miranda had been complaining about how abusive her husband was being. And that's serious stuff, And I laugh when I say press Butts because my girl, when she talks about sex, because she's not a prude, but, she doesn't like talking about that kind of stuff. She always says, touch Butts. Oh, well, we're going to touch Butts later? I'm like, yeah, totally. We're just going to press our butts together. That made me laugh. Right. And we don't do that for parents listening and stuff. We did it twice, and that was it. It's very important to reiterate here that there has never been any evidence other than Miranda's word that her husband, Sam Boob, was abusive. Neighbors would later come forward saying that he'd heard arguments on occasion, so it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that Sam was indeed abusive to Miranda. but most close to the case believed Miranda was lying for attention. Regardless, Ron Heichel sure believed it, though in the interrogation room, he wouldn't say a word. Miranda can't shut up during her statement period. She's throwing Ron under the bus, then getting in her car to roll over him again and again, all while Kermit Butts is hitting fat jumps with a scooter using Heichel's back in his interrogation. When the text between Miranda and Ron are recovered, it becomes obvious that Miranda has been playing down the seriousness of her relationship with Ron Heichel. The affair was a steamy one, and though her well-paid attorneys try everything to paint Miranda as a victim here as well as Sam Boob, the texts show her leading Heichel on, begging him for help, confirming multiple times that she'd like a, quote, pond put in, before choreographing every step of the murder plot through text, leading Sam Boob to his death while he was just trying to make her and the kids some bacon and eggs before church. It's cold-blooded, and in the end, Miranda Boob is found guilty of conspiracy to commit murder and sentenced to life in the Muncie State Prison. She has since exhausted all appeals and will never get out alive. As per Pennsylvania law, her three children and one from Sam's previous relationship, four kids total, were left in limbo following Miranda's selfish actions. They were put into the custody of the late Sam Boob's sister, Christy, and her husband, the unsung hero in this case, Ben Court. And I think that's incredible. I mean, jeez. What a fucking pain in the ass this was for Ben Court. But he's a killer. Christy is the sister to Sam Boob, so Ben Court is outside of this family. He goes in, wears a wire, gets them everything they need to arrest Miranda, and then he takes on the challenge of raising the four kids left behind there. Unbelievable. Really incredible. It gives me chills for some reason, what Ben Court did here. For some reason? I mean, he solved a murder and then took on four children from a man who was murdered, who he's not directly related to. There are heroes all around us, unsung, and I'm just going to say sing the praises of Ben Court here in this situation. Whatever will be, will be. Shit, do you have time for your own kids? I guess not on that. Maybe they got the insurance money. Kermit Butts got hit as an accessory to murder. But because of his cooperation, he only received 14 months. Maybe worst of all, he had to suffer the embarrassment of being the butt in the Boobs case. And as for Ron Heichel, during his trial, he sat straight and proud of his act, beaming, believing he had acted righteously and in the spirit of true love. However, by the time his sentence of life in prison came down, he was slumped and defeated already, having learned that Miranda had been entertaining another affair, one I alluded to, one that she'd been involved in for much longer than a summer, one with a man named Wes Decker, whom Miranda felt was her actual one true love. Wes was a man she had asked to kill her husband as well, but Wes Decker had refused. He was a man who Miranda had hoped to live happily ever after with. He was the first person that she called when she went to prison. That's how they caught on to him. She had hoped to live with Wes, financed by her deceased husband's ample life insurance, following the use of Ron Heichel as an assassin. And that's sad. I mean, I almost choked up right there. My voice cracked. I mean, it did it again. And that was a rough one. And not very nice. But that, ladies and gentlemen, holy fuck, is what I like to call the entitled love of Miranda Boob. And that'll do it. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. It's been a month and a half after I promised, like, weekly, probably, every couple of weeks. I'm really sorry. I really am. I've had a few things going on in my life. People on Patreon know what's going on with me. It shouldn't be that big of a deal, but I was kind of, like, knocked out of commission for a while there. I want to shout out, excuse me, That's Illegal. That's my brother's Leroy Luna's podcast. He's super consistent, and I love what he's doing. He's probably got one of my favorite, he does have one of my favorite podcasts. I was going to say probably one of my favorite podcasts, but what's the other one? Oh, Chris D'Elia. Congratulations. He came back, and God, he makes me laugh. But Leroy makes me laugh too. And excuse me, That's Illegal is a podcast that you should be checking out. Also, 911 Calls with the Operator, always fun. I'm on there once a month right now. He's got guest hosts coming up. Kent Chungus from True Crime Kent is going to be on a few of them. And I just love those guys, Kent and the Operator from 1159 Media, obviously. I mean, I just went to Baraboob. I really tried to lay off those jokes for that because everyone else had made jokes on that, the other podcast, or there wasn't many. No, I don't know if you've ever heard of this case, but people really were laying on the boob and butt jokes, and I guess I'm one of them now. Check out True Crime Kent, 911 Calls podcast, and excuse me, That's Illegal. Kent's so much fun, man, and so, God, the Operator, too. The Operator is exactly who you think he would be. I hung out for 3 days with those guys in Baraboo, Wisconsin, because of the leg thing. We went there, and it's a spooky place. It really, God, it was a spooky place. And we went to the Man Mound, where the ancient Indian burial ground, and we walked all over it by accident before seeing the sign. And I laughed the whole time. And it was really, I don't know if cathartic's the right word, because I don't know what words mean. But I felt really good. Coming back from that, it was a 12-hour drive. I drove through Minnesota and Wisconsin. I stayed in Duluth, Minnesota, in a haunted mansion completely by myself, and it was the fucking biggest mistake I ever made in my life. I didn't sleep at all. I saw a shadow move in the bathroom while I was watching Seinfeld in my bed. Ugh. Ghosts exist, just so you know. And yeah, we went to the Man Mound, the ancient burial ground where the legs got cut off on that road. They cut through them, and I made that connection on the leg thing. And we walked on it, and now we're cursed. What else? Yeah, I just... Those guys, the Operator and Kent Chungus, were more than what I thought they were. I've met those guys online. And if you don't know, I'm sure you do. I do the 911 Calls podcast, and we have True Crime Kent as a part of 1159, and we met up just so we could meet each other in person. The whole trip was funded by listeners of Dark Topic and True Crime Kent and 911 Calls podcast, thanks to Tracy Cash, who we met on that trip as well. Thank you to everybody who contributed to the fund that made it possible for us to actually do that. They saw me in action, I saw them in action, and they were, it didn't disappoint. It was just so much fun, and I was really happy to get back to my family. But, and what it did for me was that long, long drive. I stopped at a place called, I'm going to shout it out, it was, where was I? I was in Minnesota, it was called the Yeehaw Saloon, and I had been driving for like 4 hours, and I stopped there to get a beer. You know, drinking and driving, not a good thing, but you can have a beer, right? And I was going to relax and have a beer. And I go in and I'm like, hey, you guys take credit cards? Because I didn't take any cash. I was just using my credit card. And there's this old man at the bar and there's the waitress like, no, we don't. I was like, okay. And I go to turn around to leave and the guy goes, well, why? And I was like, well, I'm from Canada. I don't have any cash. He's like, sit down. So I sit down and they start asking me questions and they buy me a beer. And, they ask me a bit what I do, and I tell them what I'm doing and all that. And it got real quiet and awkward because sometimes when you mention what you do when you're a true crime podcaster, people don't know what the fuck to do with you. And that was the case here. I asked him what he did, and he grades roads. And I asked the bartender what she did, and she tends bar, apparently. And I finished my beer and I left because it was fucking awkward as shit. But I loved that they called me back in for the beer. I really appreciated it. Other than that, check out Dead Bug if you're looking for something to watch on YouTube. We've become friends with Dead Bug. He's not for everybody, but if you're looking for something to watch, check out Dead Bug. I mean, he's a bug who will burrow into your sensitivities and make them feel more sensitive than they've ever felt before. Huge fan of Dead Bug and his true crime stories on YouTube. And other than that, I mean, what I really want to say about that trip that I just took was that I just feel rejuvenated. I've been in a hole for a long time. I love my family. I know you know that. Like I get a lot from all that, but there's something about being social that I haven't had for a long time. And I got that when I went on that trip and just interacted with people on the way back and all that. I feel like a lot of my confidence came back on that whole trip. And I was talking to a friend of mine. I called him on the way home and he said, I was telling him about my confidence and all that. And this is going to sound like a brag or a strange flex here. But he said, trying to kill you is like trying to drown a fish. And I hope that's true. I really do. You know, I'm a loser in my mind who's winning, you know, thanks to you guys listening and everything that's going on with 1159 and the Patreon support and all that. I'm a loser who's winning, and I can't wait to see what I become with a winning mindset. Maybe I'll lose. Who knows? Anyway, thank you so much. I'm not going to make any promises, but I feel ramped up, and I can't say how much I appreciate you hanging in there with me. Eyes cocked, doors locked, stay paranoid. Talk at you soon.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.